with a positive preparation for disaster. This is Community Alert, keeping you informed about how to be prepared, not if, but when disaster strikes. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on KZSB, AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio.
Welcome, folks, to another edition of Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. And my co-host, Mike Williams. Today we're discussing not if but when disaster strikes. And we're here today with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. And I'm going to turn this over to Mike. He's got some questions for Ron, so go for it.
Hello, Chief. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Guy.
Appreciate you taking time out. I know you keep very busy.
I try to.
Well, let's just jump in right away with the number one question. Why should citizens be prepared to evacuate in the event of a fire?
Well, it's not just a case of an event of a fire. There's lots of reasons why people might be forced to withdraw from their home. Wildfire is probably the most obvious one because we've had so many major wildland fires. There could be conditions under flooding or under landslides or under earthquakes, or there's any number of events that might cause a neighborhood to be exposed to some kind of a threat. And so evacuation planning, is, you know, it's got two sides of it. One is that the community has to be prepared to conduct an evacuation, and then individual homeowners must be prepared to conduct an evacuation. Kind of like a partnership in a sense of the word.
Well, I think that's an important distinction because there is a difference between a community and the individuals themselves, and we certainly have seen that here in Santa Barbara as it related to the Zacka fire, the T fire, as well as the Gap, the Gap fire. Right. And we also had the La Conchita mudslide, which is actually in Ventura County, but that also hit us pretty hard. So evacuations both of communities and individual areas has been definitely an issue in Santa Barbara.
Well, it's an issue statewide. If you take a look at the record in California, over, I'd say, maybe a period of about 10 years, we probably asked people to leave their homes and relocate themselves more in the last 10 years than we did in the previous 50. And all I'd have to do is point to conditions in San Diego back a couple of years ago when we had the massive fires in San Diego and places of that nature. So it's not a question of is it going to happen. It's really a question of when is it going to happen and who's it going to happen to?
Well, absolutely. In case of San Diego, that was 500,000 people, and they had to evacuate those folks three different occasions. That is a lot of people to dislocate.
Well, I would prefer to use the word relocate rather than dislocate, but that's okay.
Well, I suppose for them it was a dislocation. I know one of the biggest issues that have come up out of the T fire was not so much the evacuation, and we'll talk more about that in a second, but coming back, the returning of the home, coming back to your business, that has become a big issue. I know that Orange County Chief Platter was talking about how much complaining went on with the ability of citizens to get back in after some of their big fires.
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that occurring. Number one is once you ask a bunch of people to withdraw from a neighborhood, there are massive security issues that then become relevant. And the issue is once you relocate people outside of a neighborhood, you have to have some kind of a system of allowing them to come back into that neighborhood. And granted, it's a problem. With planning and preparation on part of the community and on the part of individual property owners, however, that can be done a lot more systematically and can be accomplished with a lot less stress. You have to remember that here's an interesting phenomena, that the law in California, when you order an evacuation, you can tell people to leave, but you can't make them leave. But once they do leave, you can stop them from coming back home. And that's because of security. We don't want people just randomly driving up and down the streets of vacated neighborhoods. So law enforcement has a key role there.
Well, let's use the T fire for folks listening to this show as an example. After the T fire came through, they lost all the infrastructure up there. All of the Edison power lines were down. The gas right. lines were not only dysfunctional, but most of them were open and gas was leaking. You had open water lines. You had open sewer lines. There were various residents were potential crime scenes, so it had to be secured. You had looters in the area potentially, and they had to be contained and identified. You know, there's a lot going on behind the scenes means it isn't necessarily a fire or an earthquake or a flood. It's all the second and third tier stuff that people have to address.
Well, that's exactly my point about why this is a joint partnership between public facilities or public agencies and private parties. If people are being asked to leave their neighborhood, they have to have confidence that their interest is being looked after. And if public safety asks you to leave the neighborhood, then they have to be prepared to protect the interest of everybody, not just a single person.
Kind of along the same theme here is the issue of stay and defend. What's your position on that?
Well, you don't mind raising a real controversy, don't you?
Well, it is controversial, but I think it's forcing people to have to address some of the realities of what an emergency is.
Well, here's the deal you got to remember. That acronym stands for leave early or stay and defend. And it's not a case of both. You do one or you do the other. You don't do half of either one of them. And my position on that right now is that I believe that that's an emerging technology and methodology that's going to be confronted by a lot more communities in the future, for the very simple reason that evacuations are extremely costly to the community, and there has to be some real rationale between areas that can afford to stay and defend their places versus people who better get out and get out quick. I will tell you that there are certain neighborhoods that have thought this through. They've got safety zones, they've got assembly areas, they've got shelter in place provisions and so forth. But there is no such thing as a universal policy that applies to everybody. I would not be comfortable making a recommendation that everybody stay or everybody leave. It's too entirely driven by variables about how well prepared you are to do both of those.
I think a good point that you're making there, and that's something that I haven't heard people speak of very often, and that is that it has to be a community effort, not just the individuals that are protecting their homes and choosing whether to stay or to leave, but that the community as a whole needs to be prepared. Could you maybe illuminate that a little bit and give us some ideas about what some of the specifics are that communities can do? And I think that our audience would be really interested in hearing some of the nuts and bolts of evacuation. And, you know, when they say leave early, how early? How do you ascertain whether you need to leave? What are the circumstances under which it could be safe to stay, and all those sort of things?
Well, I'll try to, you say illuminate. I'm not sure if I'm going to illuminate or maybe cast shadows, but I'll try both.
Well, it takes illumination to have shadows. So.
That is correct. So here's the approach I would take to that, is that when we talk about evacuation of a neighborhood, and I know I'm being redundant, but I want to go back to a very simple premise, and that is evacuation, if it's a big surprise to everybody, it's going to be chaos. Mm-hmm. If an individual property owner has not thought about it, it's going to be tough to do at the last minute. If the public safety agency has never contemplated an evacuation and doesn't have a plan, it's going to be tough. So where I'm going to direct your attention at this point is that it starts with, number one, risk assessment. The individual property owner has to kind of go up porch and take a look. What do they see? What is the potential for something beginning to affect their home that could ask public safety agencies to cause them to withdraw? Then walk out in the backyard and do the same thing. If you're in an urban wildland interface area, you would be naive to assume that you're never going to be asked to evacuate. If you're on a floodplain, you'd be naive to assume that you're never going to evacuate. So risk assessment is part of it. Second thing I would point out is that there's an old saying about prior planning prevents confusion, all right? And when a person realizes they live in an area that could have a potential threat, they don't have to panic about it, but they've got to start thinking about how their neighborhood would respond. We don't evacuate single houses. We evacuate neighborhoods. We say things like, everybody south of Maine, move. We don't say, mm-hmm. you know, all left-handed people should leave their homes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the name of the game with evacuation planning up, number one, is A, start with the assumption that if there is a risk to your neighborhood, you better have a plan. You live in an earthquake zone? Think about it. You live in an area with potential landslides? think about it. The concept of leave early or stay and defend is based upon an idea that a person who has a piece of property has to kind of sit back and evaluate whether their home is defensible. And this may sound like a little bit of a joke, but there's an old joke about the fact that a guy's house was flooded once, and as his house was being flooded, a guy came by in a rowboat and said, "Why don't you leave your house?" And he says, "Well, the good Lord's going to provide. I'm not going to worry about it." And then another guy comes by about 2 hours later in another bigger boat and says, "You better leave your house." And he said, "Well, yeah." I said, "But the good Lord's going to provide." And then a helicopter flew over about 4 hours later and said, "You're going to have to leave." And the guy said, "Well, I'm not worried. The good Lord's going to provide." And then all of a sudden the house turned upside down. He gets dumped in the water and drowns. And when he gets to heaven, he talks to St. Peter and he said, "I don't understand. He saw that the good Lord was provide." He said, "I sent you help 3 times. You ignored it."
Yeah, you got it.
Well, Chief, we've got to take our first break here. This is Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board. Today's guest, former State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. We'll be back with you in just a minute. This is KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com.
Back to Community Alert, Not If It When Disaster Strikes. Myself, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and we're here today with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. And maybe we want to pick up where we were just a minute ago and continue in that stay and defend discussion. Ron, I think you've got some other points you'll want to make there.
Yeah, and what I would like to emphasize is that the concept of leave early or stay or defend is not an individual decision. It's basically a decision that has to be based upon planning with the community and the public safety entities. One of the things I'd emphasize is that evacuation planning that happens spontaneously, in other words, all of a sudden there's a threat down the street and someone says move, is really different than having a threat that approaches a neighborhood and people know that they've got defensible space and that they know they've got certain things into place. So when we use this concept of leave early, we're saying you better leave early because you can't defend your place. And if we say stay and defend, then we have to be able to say categorically it's defensible. Now, that doesn't happen by accident. That means that neighborhood groups need to work with their public safety agencies to make both of those determinations. We have things called CERTs, which are Citizen Emergency Response Team training. And you have a group called Fire Corps that meets and so forth. And what we're suggesting here is that prior to any event, the degree to which we can raise the level of awareness in an individual property owner is going to determine whether or not it's going to be safe for them to do either one of those.
I would like to take a moment here to promo a couple of brochures that folks can download off their internet. One's your Wildfire Action Plan. This is modeled after the Ventura County Action Plan. It's available at the Santa Barbara County Fire website, sbcfire.com. That's sbcfire.com. And there's also Living with Wildfire, the Guide to Homeowners in Santa Barbara County. This is a collaborative effort between the Fire Safe Council and State Farm Insurance. Those are available at the Red Cross as well as here at the station, and both the city and county fire departments. So both of these are excellent brochures on how to plan for evacuation and how to make your property safe in the event of a fire. Ted.
I would like to talk a little bit, if we can, about some of the procedures that people need to go through in order to evacuate in a safe and orderly fashion. I know that I've heard things such as parking your car, backing into your property so you don't have to back out into traffic. There's several tips that we've heard we give people, such as to take all your plastic lawn furniture and plastic garbage cans and put them in the garage so they don't blow up against the side of your building because the winds come up during a fire event and they can catch your building on fire. Have you got any of those sort of things, Ron, that you could pass along to us?
Oh, sure. Those are personal preparation things, and you've already alluded to at least one of the big ones, and that is that in the event that you're asked to withdraw from a neighborhood, backing out into traffic is a cause of a lot of fender benders and confusion and chaos and so forth. But it's more important that you also take into consideration having a plan for what you're going to take with you. For example, and I've made this suggestion numerous times myself, is that every family or business ought to have kind of like a description or an inventory of really critical things that should go with them. For example, a box that's got their wedding pictures in it, or a location where they can gather their important papers very, very quickly. Homes can be rebuilt, but personal possessions sometimes cannot be. So you need to have a plan as to what is the important priorities that you're going to take with you if you do have to withdraw. That could include everything from, you know, like major art objects. Obviously, you're probably not going to take a statue out of your backyard, but by the same token, you might have a valuable coin collection or a valuable stamp collection, and you need to have a plan for that. It's not a case of just throwing stuff in the trunk. You need to have a process in mind for what you're going to do. And you have to remember there's two types of these events, too. One is when the family is all together as a unit, and the other is what are you going to do when the family's separated as a unit. For example, if an evacuation is at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, kids can be at school and dad's at work. Mom's got home by herself. Or it's 3 o'clock in the morning, everybody's at home. So the plan has to take into consideration the variables of when it might happen.
Have you got, Ron, have you got any reading material that you are your favorite reading material, something that would run down many of these things that people could pick up other than just a website? Do you have a book or have you got any ideas on that?
Well, the point that was just made a few minutes ago by Mike is a really good one, and that is that a lot of organizations have checklists that are on their website. Ventura, Santa Barbara, Cal Fire, a lot of the organizations that put this stuff out have appropriate reading materials. Federal Emergency Management Agency has some stuff on evacuation planning. There is no real, what I would call, popular text for John Q. Citizen to read, per se. But there are these various checklists. If you live in a flood zone, there's a flood checklist. If you live in an area with high wind conditions, I happen to have done some work back in the East Coast, and they have a problem back there with hurricanes. So they've got specific information on hurricanes. And I would suggest that if a family is really going to plan for this, that they contact their local emergency services group and get as much reading material as they can, that they use the statewide websites and then go to the federal website and put together a little reading list.
Ron, this is Richard Dugan, and I have a question from John Q. Citizen. Basically, all right, this is all great stuff, and I'm certainly happy to put together the box and the files and maybe put this stuff over here and there and get ready for this type of stuff. But how long do I need to stay in this mode of preparedness? I mean, I want to get back to my normal life and the way things are supposed to be.
Well, Mr. John Q. Citizen, what we're basically saying is this is not a process that you just do one time and then it's over with. It's kind of like a thought consideration. The kind of planning I'm talking about is something that you spend an evening around a dining room table with a notepad and some thought processes, but you don't live with it every single solitary day. You just have the plan. For example, I've suggested to people that once they create this plan that they go to their closet. Most homes, when you walk in, have a closet right there by the front door, or they have one that goes right into the garage. And I say, post your plan on the closet. Don't even think about it until you have to do it.
So that normalcy is the plan.
The normalcy is the plan. I was on a wildfire here recently. It occurred locally, and I happened to pull up in a neighborhood, and there was this woman who was absolutely in a complete panic out in their front yard. And I walked up to her, and I started talking to her, and I said, you know, just calm down for a few seconds. What do you have in your home right now that you're really, really concerned about? And she gave me kind of this blank look at me. She says, what do you mean by concerned about? I said, well, what is it you got in your home that you can't afford to lose? And then she started ticking things off. Well, I can't afford my photo album. My boss says, okay, go in there and find those things right now. But it turned out that her house was never exposed. The fire stopped on a fire line, but she had never thought about it. And that's all we're talking about.
We heard from one of the folks during the tea fire in Mountain Drive that they used a checklist, and it was very beneficial to them because they didn't know what to take, and went into the throes of panic. They went to the checklist, and they did exactly what it said, and they were very grateful for it. But we're up to our next break here. This is Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orfalea Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. This is Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan, visiting today with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman on KZSB AM 1290 or Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back with you after these messages.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Welcome back to Community Alert, Not If It When Disaster Strikes. Myself, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and we're here today with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman.
Captain Sadecki over at Santa Barbara County Fire Department asked that we remind motorists that if they hear or see emergency vehicles coming up behind them, that they yield to the right. When you hear sirens or see red lights, pull to the right side of the road. Failure to do so can cause serious accidents or delays in arriving at the scene of an emergency. If you find yourself behind an emergency vehicle, stay at least 300 feet behind it in case they have to stop suddenly. If you're a pedestrian, please stay out of the way and keep your children close at hand. These are brought to you by the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Anyway, we're happy to help those folks out. Ted, you wanted to have a go into the next series of questions here.
You spoke about we've been talking about personal preparation for evacuation. I'd like to perhaps get you to talk a little bit about community preparation and what that entails and how folks can organize their community so that they have some sort of solidarity to interface with agencies. Do you have any suggestions for us?
Okay, when we use the word community, I'm going to divide that into two categories. One is neighborhood, and then the other is community. Mm-hmm. Neighborhood, to me, is a really key element of evacuation planning because neighborhoods usually have some kind of homogeneity to them. Like there's a neighborhood where people kind of know each other, and everybody has a kind of a working relationship of where the schools are, where the traffic patterns flow, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So one level of training is past the personal preparation is to actually do some preparation at the neighborhood level. This is where neighborhood associations come in, homeowners associations come in. They need to have a good interface with public safety agencies. That's where the these things like CERT programs and Fire Corps, et cetera, build an interface with the people to do some training and some awareness and understanding how the notification systems are going to work and how the community is going to respond at a neighborhood level. Then you go to the community level. The community has kind of an obligation under California Emergency Services Act to have an evacuation plan in place. And that would include such things as how you're going to make the decision to order an evacuation, how you're going to decide what areas you're going to relocate people out of, what kind of shelter plan you're going to have in place, what kind of registration program you're going to have in place to keep track of people, what kinds of assembly areas you're going to have. And then the two of those two planning components can interact with each other over time. A neighborhood association, it might be timely, for example, like once a year to evaluate how they would react if they were being requested to withdraw from their neighborhood. A community might hold an annual drill to just do that.
Okay. You know, here in Santa Barbara, there are several areas that are starting to really get aggressive in this. Westmont College has gotten much more aggressive. They're trying to model themselves somewhat after the Pepperdine Emergency Services model. Hollister Ranch has gone all the way to the point that they're doing a municipal-level emergency operation plan. The folks at Petoskey at the north end of the county are also really getting organized. And, of course, there's the Wildland Residents Association. You talked about drills. Probably one of the most aggressive drills in Southern California was done right here in Santa Barbara back in 2007 on April 28th, the Riviera evacuation drill. And this was a real drill. This was not something that was done on tabletop. This was a complete exercise, including the roadblocks and the reverse 911 and the deployment of assets into the field. And ironically, when the T-fire came through, the T-fire burned all the way through the drill exercise area. So the community up there had actually practiced the evacuation that ultimately took place during the T-fire. And it was very well thought out in advance of the fire by Yoli over at Santa Barbara City OES. And it's a tremendous amount of work that went into that, and it obviously paid off. There aren't too many drills that are done that are actually tested under real circumstances a year later.
True. But I would suggest that practice doesn't make perfect, it just makes permanent. Is that the more that people practice this kind of a concept, the better off it'll be when it actually has to happen.
Well, we have certainly seen in the Zacha fire and the Gap fire and again in the T fire that evacuation planning does in fact work. And when people are prepared, they get out quickly. And we've had no real significant events occur in the evacuation phase on any of these fires. And that's really quite phenomenal. When you start looking at the problems that have been associated down in Los Angeles, particularly in Malibu, with evacuations, we've been very fortunate up here in Santa Barbara.
Well, one of the challenges most people have failed to realize is that an evacuation as a phenomena is kind of an interesting traffic control problem, because at the same time you're trying to get everybody out of an area, you're trying to bring resources in to control the emergency. And the better the plan is on the part of the individual persons and homeowners and business owners, and the better the plan is by the community and the neighborhood, the more likely there'll be a minimum amount of conflict.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, because the number one complaint that I've heard from the authorities of both law enforcement and fire about the T fire wasn't people getting out. It was all the spectators trying to get in.
Yeah, we call that convergence. And you got one group of spectators. I call them professional spectators. That's called the media.
Right.
And, you know, they're all coming in with their vans, with their antennas on the roof. They want to see what's going on. And then you have a certain number of people in our society that just can't stand to drive by a disaster without going over and looking at it. And that's one of the reasons why. I mean, you asked me a question earlier about why is it hard for people to get back into a neighborhood? Because we want to control who goes back in those neighborhoods, not just the looky-loos and the wannabes. We want people in that neighborhood who belong there.
Well, we talk a lot about fires, but I like to come back to the issue of earthquakes and floods, because those are the big ticket items. Santa Barbara has far more problems with flooding than it does with fires.
Correct.
And the big earthquake that's going to hit sooner or later is going to impact us in a big way, in a much longer duration than a fire does. What is the current philosophy on these long-term events?
Well, I'm not sure I'm adequate to answer the question of the current philosophy. I'll tell you what my philosophy is, and that is that this program is called Not If, When. And I'm really a strong believer in the fact that all catastrophic events will occur sooner or later. California, we may have a tsunami someday that's going to require an evacuation of major beach areas. We know we're going to have a major earthquake. So the name of the game is to have some kind of a thought process, an awareness level below the level of apathy or above the level of apathy. I commented earlier about having a personal plan. I didn't allude to the fact that there's another element of that plan, and that plan is, what do you do if you're actually asked to leave? You know, so your car's backed in, so you got a box of all your goodies in it. What do you do next? And there's a couple of really specific suggestions we need to talk about there. First off is, you need to know where you're going to go. You need to have a relocation plan. Are you going to go to a shelter locally, or are you going to go visit Aunt Margaret, who lives 150 miles away? Interestingly enough, in most evacuations, very few people use the formal sheltering system. Everybody goes somewhere else. You also have to have a plan about where the family is going to get together. For example, you happen to be in Santa Barbara, if I remember correctly, Mike.
Correct.
And if I was going to evacuate from Santa Barbara, I would probably go to my buddy's house in Ventura as my relocation point. But I would also let my wife know that if this occurred at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that's where she's supposed to go, too, so that we can all get together. One of the biggest problems in a lot of evacuations is putting families back together. The kids are at school when it happens. Dad's at work, mom's at home, or vice versa, or whatever the case may be. So your plan has to include where you're going to go, what direction are you going to go to get away from whatever the problem is, and what kind of provisions have you made to be able to operate self-sufficiently for about 72 hours.
Absolutely. You brought up a kind of paralleling this a little bit. You brought up the issue about funding and budgets and what have you. Clearly, California's got in trouble, and it's not going to something that's going to change overnight. How is this impacting on emergency services as it relates to evacuation and these large calamities?
Well, that's a really good question. There are many different facets of the budget impact. Number one is that the budget has had an impact on the amount of resources that are available to deploy in some of these cases, and the amount of resources that people are able to put to use to get out there and talk to citizens in anticipation that an event is likely to occur. Public safety agencies are hard-pressed to do both of those in tough budget times. I would characterize one of the economic factors is that one of the things that's really important for people to realize is that when homes are evacuated and they're subsequently destroyed from whatever cause there is, that's an economic impact also.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's destruction of the property tax, and there's reassessment that occurs, and there's all sorts of negative consequences. So one of the things that's part of this whole process is trying to get people back in those homes as quickly as possible and to restore the community back to being normal as quickly as possible. And that's why we're pushing this idea that advanced planning is an important part of maintaining that community stability.
Well, hold that thought. We've got to take our next break here. This is Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working on the board. Visiting today with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. This is Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster on your KZSB AM 1290 Santa Barbara News Press Radio and live streaming on newspress.com.
Welcome back to Community Alert, not if but when disaster strikes. Myself, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and we're here today with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. Ron, I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about the psychology of evacuation and what I'm understanding, we just barely touched on it, but it seems to me that when people have a plan that they can put into place when they are notified either that they have to evacuate or they see that there is an encroaching disaster or something, once they have the plan, it gives them much less panic because they've got a structure that they can refer to in order to make something happen instead of having to make a decision right at that moment. And I've been encouraging people to, and you mentioned people that have collections and that sort of thing, to maybe cluster some of the things that they find most valuable in that collection so that they can go and grab that and take it with them rather than having to think about what it is they need to take and which part do they treasure the most. And so the less decisions that have to be made under that duress, the more comfortable it's going to be. And maybe this is really an obvious thing, but I'd like to get your input on that.
Well, obviously, I concur with that. I've been involved in multiple evacuations in my career from a variety of subjects, including hazmat spills and so forth. And there is a phenomena that takes place when people don't have a plan. I'll talk about that because I think that's more important mm-hmm. than those that do. When they don't have a plan, they do inappropriate things. They might go in and grab the TV set. Mm-hmm. Like it always cracks me up when I'm watching people evacuate their homes on these wildland fires. You see some guy lugging a 54-inch television set out, which you could replace in a heartbeat at the local Good Guys store, you know. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they left their wedding album and their passport and their kids' photos in the house. And what we're talking about here is that the plan more or less overcomes that sense of blindness that occurs when you're told you've got 15 minutes to leave. Generally speaking, and I want to talk a little bit about this, is that one of the other elements of pre-planning is to understand the warning system, understand how the alert and warning system works. I used to be a nuclear planter down in San Clemente, mm-hmm. and we spent an awful lot of time talking about reverse 911 systems, and we did work with public siren systems, and we did stuff with the information emergency broadcasting system and so forth. I strongly recommend that people who live in high threat zones have one of those radios that is set to pick up special channels for weather and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things tie in with it's kind of like the old analogy that if you don't know what you're doing, any road will take you there.
Well, you mentioned sirens. That's something that's coming back as a topic in Santa Barbara. What's your experience with sirens?
Well, of course, I've had them as an off-site planning scenario in San Clemente for years, and then there's multiple locations around the country that have had both pro and con experiences with sirens. I believe that they're a component of the warning system. My personal belief is I would not rely on them in their entirety to be the warning system. I think that they're just part of it.
Well, I think what they're talking about doing is augmenting local radio and television media.
Correct.
Here with sirens. To try to get people to pay attention to the media perhaps a little more than they do. Why did they get away from sirens? I mean, that sirens have served the emergency community for probably 200 years.
Well, I'm not sure I could really tell you why they got away from it. I can tell you that the reaction on some people's part to the testing of sirens or the overuse of them causes a little bit of grief locally. Many volunteer fire departments have discontinued using sirens because they've gone to radio notification systems.
Right.
My feeling about that is that the sirens are primarily used for notifying people who are outside. Under high wind conditions, they're not always reliable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the cost and the maintenance of them obviously is an issue.
Yeah.
And I've heard some pretty interesting conversations about what is required to put a siren in and the permitting and the environmental impact study. I mean, it's absurd some of the things that people are going to have to go through to put them back in.
Right.
But they are a viable asset. Now, of course, at San Marcos Pass, we run a low-power radio station, and those have become very popular throughout the county. Montecito has put one up, and I know Santa Barbara City is exploring the use of them. And you've been involved in a couple projects here recently, too, with those, haven't you?
Yes, I've been. I just wrote a column for Fire Chief Magazine that's called QSL. You know what QSL means in radio code?
Are you there, isn't it?
Yes, are you there? I wrote an article that talks about the fact that public safety agencies have a need to communicate as directly as possible with their constituencies, and vice versa, the constituencies need to be paying attention to what the public safety people want them to do.
Well, this radio shows the outgrowth of the Gaviota fire back in 2005 when the lack of information became more than the public as a whole wanted to tolerate. So we started working on various solutions, and ultimately Community Alert was born out of part of that, as well as the Semper's 1040 station and organization called EPIC, made up of public and private and media public information officers, and some various changes in the Office of Emergency Services also came out of there. There's been a lot happening in Santa Barbara, as that goes. Ted, you had a question.
I was just wanted to revisit a bit the interface between the communities and the communities, the neighborhoods, and the agencies, and what do you perceive of being the best device for that? I know that we're trying in our area to encourage the neighborhoods to organize and to participate early on with some of the things that we have with the pre-planning that goes into these disasters. Is there anything that you've seen on a larger level that is working for that end?
Well, the best example I can actually cite is a project that goes on in Australia every year called Bushfire Blitz.
Mm-hmm.
And what Bushfire Blitz is they take these specific neighborhoods that they know are going to be threatened, and they go out into those neighborhoods on a weekend basis with a van and a kind of like a temporary facility. It's like a little tent, whatever. And they go park it in the cul-de-sacs in areas where they know they're going to have threatened homes. And they go out there and they meet with the homeowners on a weekend-by-weekend-by-weekend basis. I've seen scaled-down versions of that. In this particular case, in Australia, it's a pretty broad-based program. It's like, I think it covers an entire major area. But individual agencies in different parts of the country have engaged in something similar. Mm-hmm. One of the things I would propose to your listeners is if they were in charge of a neighborhood group, invite the fire and police department to come and talk. Just extend an invitation to them. Maybe they don't think that they're welcome, but maybe if you ask them, they'll come and make a presentation to help you clarify something.
What we've been doing here in our area is to get the firefighters to go into certain neighborhoods on a Saturday and go door to door and meet the public that they're going to be dealing with, and have the public meet them and talk to the folks in their homes about preparedness. And we take a pamphlets out, and that way the public, there's a nice interface, nice liaison there, and both the firefighters and the public get a chance to know each other and know the neighborhoods where they're going to be working, and it seems to work well.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Australia. There's a lot of progressive things going on in Australia. One of them is they have a national radio show very similar to Community Alert, doing very much what we do here, to try to do exactly that, reach out to the community as a whole, whether it be the business community or residents or what have you, as to what to do to be prepared. So we're up to our next break here. Sorry to interrupt. This is Mike Williams, Ted Adams, and Richard Dugan working the board today. We're visiting with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. This is Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back with you in just a minute.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Welcome, folks, to our final segment of Community Alert, Not If It When Disaster Strikes. Myself, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and we're here today with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman. And, Ron, we're going to just kind of summarize the program, turn it over to you, and let's just do a little recap of all the things we've spoken of in the last hour. So what have you got for us?
Well, what I basically would like to summarize this is kind of along the lines of your theme, and that is not if, when, is the idea that evacuations are likely to happen in the lifestyle of people who live in California. So the name of the game is to be as well prepared as possible. I would characterize the fact that a family that's got an evacuation plan is less likely to be emotionally as distressed as one that doesn't. And so my suggestion is that everybody start thinking about it and start raising their level of personal and family awareness. Number two is, if you're actually asked to do it, and you have to do it in a certain time frame, that you have a plan that you can execute, that you can leave in a kind of like get your act together, so to speak. And then last but not least is to have a sense of purpose behind why this plan is in the best interest of your community and your neighborhood, by understanding how you interact with public safety agencies. And instead of getting upset with the cop who won't let you back in, have an understanding of why the cop doesn't want you to go in there. And spend some time making sure that you go back into the entry process under some kind of a planned return. The name of the game with evacuation is, quite frankly, is if you have to do it right. I can honestly say that there are people out there who probably have been asked to leave their homes, and for all intents and purposes survived the experience and got war stories to tell because they were able to improvise at the last moment. But that's not the way we ought to be doing it.
Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of places out there where we can get the information specifically on how to do it properly.
That's right.
And make it easy for themselves and for the agencies to have these communities evacuated.
There's the Santa Barbara County Fire website at sbcfire.com. That's sbcfire.com. That's the evacuation, your wildfire action plan. It's a collaborative effort between the county and the Fire Safe Council. You can also give them a call at 681-5500. And then, of course, once again, the Living with Wildfire, available at the Santa Barbara County Fire Department or here at this station, a guide to homeowners in Santa Barbara County. Again, a collaborative effort between the Fire Safe Council, State Farm Insurance. This is all important stuff, and I appreciate you taking time to talk to us, because I don't think we can stress this enough. It's going to happen again.
Well, I once ordered an evacuation where a lady said, "What should I take?" And she took all of her silverware, put it in a sheet, and threw it in her swimming pool, and took a bottle of Jack Daniels and walked down the street. I never did get a chance to talk to that lady, but I said she must have had a plan to do something.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, briefly was during the Gap Fire, I was in Vermont. There was no evacuation. I was already gone. But who was I going to call to go to my house and pick up my important stuff unless I was already prepared?
You had your Jack Daniel's with you.
But we talk about evacuation and getting your stuff out of your house, and that's an example, too, where you may not be at home. Can you have somebody come to your house? And we didn't even touch on the issue of animals today. We're going to have some folks in from the animal control sometime next month to talk about horses and livestock and some of the other challenges that animals create during evacuations. Well, Chief, I want to thank you for giving us a call. I know you're very busy. How's everything up in Sacramento keeping you busy? And I appreciate your time.
Well, I had a lot of fun doing this, and I hope that we've shared some information that caused people to think about it.
Well, that's our intent. That's the objective here with Community Alert. This has been Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster, with retired State Fire Marshal Ron Coleman visiting with us today, talking about evacuation preparedness. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the board. This is KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com live stream. Community Alert available on Tuesdays at 11 and again at 9 p.m. and on Saturdays at 1. If you have any questions for Community Alert, give us a call at 964-7194, 964-7194, or shoot us an email at community@wildlandsresidents.org. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. The news is next.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.